You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 339. You know, John, I don't know what the theme music to this episode was because we don't actually hear it when we record, but I really hope it was Sakatum JB by The Specials because it's in my head right now.
Oh, I was hoping it was a Spanish Flea.
That's John Gentile joining me on tonight's show, features editor on Punk News. I'm Adam White. Also joining us, the new classic crew is rounded out here by Mr. Ricky Frankel. Hey, Ricky.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
So, I don't know. I don't even know how it's going. It's cold. That's what we do. I sit down to record this show. The icy hand of death puts its icy fingers upon my shoulders.
Okay, as long as it's above the waist.
Yeah. Well, hey, in any case, it would be cold. And I'm a little bit fed up. I've had one of those middle of February weeks that one has in the middle of February when you just sort of want to strangle everyone you meet.
Yeah.
Do you get that? Is that a northern person thing?
Well, it might be, man, but I'll tell you, last week I was getting my ass kicked right and left. Last week was a rough week. Luckily, thankfully, this week has actually been like really good so far. So I'm hoping it stays that good. But last week, but both cheeks were red, Adam. Both cheeks.
This is an oddly sexual start to tonight's show. So, I guess before we get into any of the news, any mail, anything we need to talk about? Anyone writing us about Nazis? Because that's really what we do here.
Talk about Nazis. You can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. This is from Yusuf Himmler. No, I'm kidding. This is from Carmine. Carmine says, Adam, why do you only play bands from Canada? There are other countries, you know. This is, and then he says, Ricky, all your bands sound like someone was just kicked out at Last Call, or if the Brats formed a band. John, you do know that music was recorded after the first Aerosmith album, right? And that's Love Carmine.
Can we answer each other ones? Like, I don't have a particular idea when Aerosmith recorded anything. I play bands from Canada because that is one of the only ways that I am of use to society.
I don't even understand his claim on mine. I mean, I think I try to play bands that I haven't, that don't get normally get a lot of attention, except for like last week.
when you played a Rage Against the Machine song off a major motion picture soundtrack.
Yes, I did. Yeah. I try and give bands that I like that aren't known like a chance. I mean, you know, I do like the melodic pop punk, and then, you know, I'll do hardcore stuff too. I mean, how long have you been listening, Carmine? I'm kind of at a loss here.
Well, listen, Carmine.
Yeah, I don't know.
I have taken your constructive criticism to heart, and I will play a new band during this podcast. How about that? This is from Jonathan. And Jonathan says, what's up with older punk bands having such a shitty online presence? It's almost like they're deliberately trying to turn away new fans and to play to empty rooms. In March 2015, and actually this paragraph I've got a very specific answer to. In March 2015, I'm walking by this little dive bar on my way home and notice a flyer in the window advertising that HR is playing a show that night. I couldn't believe it. The legendary HR at this tiny dive bar in Long Beach, just a block away from my house. Anyway, the show itself was horrible. Poorly attended, low energy, lame extended reggae jams. But the bigger question I had is why I, a huge Bad Brain fan, only knew about the show because I happened to walk by the venue where the show was taking place. The only online promotion I could find was a picture of the flyer posted on the venue's Facebook page. You would think that someone with the legacy of HR would take a little bit more pride in their performance and have someone manage a Facebook page or Instagram page with links to shows or dates or something. And he continues, but I'm going to answer that. With HR specifically, and you do see this with some older acts, be it rock, be it punk, be it hip-hop especially, is they'll often have like a relative or a spouse or someone like that, quote, handle their promotion, and that person really has no idea what they're doing. And so it's not that they don't care, it's just they just don't know what to do, and they kind of just think you just book a gig and show up and play it, when that's really not how it works, especially in the modern age. HR is a very specific case, special case, because HR, as we all know, has issues, and I think the people around him maybe somewhat feed into those issues. Does that make sense, Adam and Ricky? Is what I'm saying?
Sure.
I can see that.
What I'm saying, HR has issues, and I don't know if the people around him necessarily agree with the precept that HR has issues. I think some of them think, oh, HR is just doing just fine, when maybe he's not. So they don't really, like, stuff is just not together. It's like their planning is not, their planning is not tight. It's in shambles. So that kind of answered the HR and a lot of other similar acts. Jonathan continues. Here's another one. I was at an adolescent show last year looking at merch, and I see all these new albums that I don't recognize. I'm looking at the release dates and see they were all put out within the last 8 years or so. At first, I wondered if these were foreign releases or compilation albums, so I checked their Wikipedia page and was very surprised to see that the Adolescents had released 4 new albums since 2010. Again, how had I not heard about this? Also, Wikipedia had no information about these albums other than their titles and release dates. Do they not do any promotion whatsoever? Just out of curiosity, I checked online to see where you could even buy these albums from the newer catalog. What I found out is they're not even available on Amazon. Some are on iTunes, but all can be ordered from the record label's seemingly 90s-era website. I think there's an answer to that one, too. Adam or Ricky, you guys know the answer to that?
I have an answer to all of this, actually. But
okay, well, then let me read the last one.
Yeah.
Last one, MDC. I'm a late bloomer to this band, but absolutely love Millions of Dead Cops. But trying to find any of their newer albums is a complete nightmare. For someone like me who loves reading band Wikipedia pages, besides that, I love reading band Wikipedia pages too. I love it.
Yes, I'm with you there.
So as someone who likes reading Wikipedia pages and seeing who's who on the album or that album, their Wikipedia is like a desert. There's a lot of album titles with no links. I tried finding the labels who put out the albums, but some seemingly have no online presence at all. Anyway, that's my rant. Are these old geezer punks just out of touch with technology? What's the deal? Why don't they make their information readily available online to promote their shows? Huge fan of the podcast and website, from Jonathan.
So, I mean, the issue of old punk bands having particularly old-looking websites has always really been the issue, and it's been one of the frustrations of trying to run punk news for so many years. One of the things that we used to get a lot of shit about back in, I don't know, say like the let's say like 2002, 2003, we used to get a lot of like daily complaints and stuff from the commenters that like, oh, why are you guys talking about, I don't know, like Rancid and AFI and all these bands? Why aren't you talking about
UK, you know, subs?
Like, that's great, because I just looked them up. They're like, why aren't you talking about the UK subs, or, you know, the Angelic Upstarts, or one of these bands, right? That's been around for a while and has a following and is legitimately, inarguably punk, isn't, you know, pop hyphen punk, isn't anything. It's just, is a punk band. Why aren't you talking about them? And the unfortunate answer is that it's a lot easier to talk about bands that facilitate the flow of information on the internet, in particular if you're an internet property, even in more particular if you're an internet property that's run by volunteers. So if a band was just a modern level of internet savvy, they could get their information out there. So back in the day, that meant they had, you know, a MySpace page before Facebook was around. Or they had a little website or something that they put together that had the information on it, or even on a business level, that they engaged and employed a publicist to put stuff out, and they found a publicist that could talk to publications like us. And a lot of the times with a lot of these older punk bands, that was not the case. And every once in a while, one of them would seem to break through the really ancient GeoCities style websites that these bands had. And then the problem is that they would do them as a single sort of one-time venture, but it was never meant to be. It was never meant to be an ongoing thing, never meant to be something that they kept up with. It was always an afterthought for them. And a great example of this is, say, like the Buzzcocks. So the Buzzcocks website is old right now, but it has been a lot older in the past. But if you go onto that website and you pull up, say, the discography section on it, it doesn't have their newest album in it. It has Flat Pack Philosophy, which is the one they released in 2006, but it doesn't have The Way, which is the one that they released after that. But think about what an egregious crime that is if you're trying to promote a band. If you are the band's official face on the internet, you're the band's website, you are, for all intents and purposes, the place someone goes to get information about that band. And this isn't just a Wikipedia page. This isn't like saying, oh, the newest MDC albums aren't that fleshed out in Wikipedia. This is like the Buzzcocks website doesn't have one of their full studio albums that they've toured behind in the discography section. Like, and you keep running into things like that. And it's because, I mean, bands approach a lot of this stuff with the intent of, you know, we want to go out and play music. They don't want to go out and, you know, manage a well-sourced and archived information resource about themselves, which is a bummer as someone who likes well-managed and archived information. So for me, it always drives me crazy because you can't get this stuff as easy as you could. And if you were someone, let's say you're a younger fan and you want to go get on and learn about, you know, you want to learn more about the Buzzcocks. Like, if you get to the front page of Buzzcocks.com, the thing that is, like, in their news section is nigh unreadable. It's just a bunch of random images and links and fonts and stuff. And they're coming soon. It says major reissue announcement. But if you click there, like, nothing happens. And you run into all this stuff that's just sort of half done that... Again, if you're a band on the road, especially an old band, like, you don't give a shit, but, you know, man, it would make it a lot easier for people to get into you. So it is the longest frustration. I don't know exactly what the deal is with the new albums from bands like this not being available. That seems to me like a preventable issue in today's internet world.
I have the answer for MDC specifically, but and maybe other bands too.
Yeah, I'm curious to hear what you think about that, because like without knowing the specific businesses that are involved in any of this, one would think that if you're an old band, and I use the term lovingly, but if you're an old band, you are probably aren't recording and releasing things under the same type of, say, oppressive contract that you would have been when you were young. So I'm going to keep staying the Buzzcocks. I'm sitting here looking at their website right now. They may not own themselves a lot of the music that's on, say, Singles Going Steady that was collected in there, right? I don't know. Who is the label? Was it CBS? Was it Buzzcocks? Or I don't know who they were on, right? Like, Buzzcocks probably don't own the rights to, like, A Different Kind of Tension or anything like that. But at the point when they got back together in the 2000s and started making records again, they could make and sell records because they're the Buzzcocks and sell them to people who already know them because they have, you know, 30, 40 years of history behind them. So they don't need to get into the kind of contract where they can't just own everything and license it out. So I don't see a lot of argument, if you're one of these bands, why at this point you need to be beholden to, you know, unfortunately the label that recorded our last thing doesn't made it available anymore. You know, I feel like Jeff Rosenstock should go teach classes. There should be like a punk rock community college where Jeff Rosenstock should teach old bands about the internet, because no one's ever going to have a problem finding something that Jeff has recorded and released in a well-organized, easily sourced place on the internet, because that's his language. He speaks that. What's the MDC situation, though?
The MDC situation is very specifically, pretty much every MDC CD or record comes out on a different label. And often, I mean, honestly, there's not a lot of money in MDC records. Like, if you put out an MDC record, you might lose money. I love MDC. MDC is great. But the fact is, not a lot of people. Hell, Crass had a problem breaking even with their records. And I think they lost money on the reissues. Not a lot of people buying that kind of stuff. So the labels that put them out are usually smaller labels that really, like, kind of don't have their stuff together. Sometimes they only do it as like a hobby, but they kind of like get it printed up and you know, they do a little bit of press, but then they forget about it because being a label isn't their main thing. Meanwhile, the band gets, you know, some boxes of CDs or records or whatever. And so they have them on tour. So they sell them on tour. So the from the band's perspective, because they are older guys, they don't necessarily, they're not aware of maybe the power of selling stuff online. And maybe selling stuff online for an older band really isn't even that effective because maybe a few people will buy it. But, you know, are hundreds of people going to buy it? Probably not. So from the band's perspective, they've got boxes of CDs and they're selling them on tour. And so that's what. So they don't necessarily recognize that there is a problem or lost revenue when there very well may be.
I mean, I would look at it as a legacy thing. Like, let's say your whole band gets, dies in a plane crash. Would you not want, you know, the entire recorded output, like their entire musical legacy, artwork, lyrics, you know, good quality songs, like everything, like available for posterity there on the internet instead of like, you know, rotting in on a master tape stuck in someone's closet because you had some, you know, German hobby label put it out for you.
It usually is German hobby labels. However, Adam, barring the what's the word I'm looking for? Not the outsiders. Barring the extraneous cases of guys like Ian McKay, Jello Biafra, who love archiving, artists generally are not the most disciplined people or the most organized people. So they just don't get to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, Discord was great to bring up because if you're looking for like the gold standard as for what I'm talking about, like go dig around on the Discord Records website. I mean, it is Wikipedia levels of,
it's a library. It is literally a library.
Not only that, but they have what was the project they released a few years ago where they went and they put out
Fugazi Live.
Yeah, like hundreds of.
They're still releasing them.
Like that, to me, is
beautiful.
Oh God! Like it just, if you were to say like, you know, you have to go live on like the world's weirdest desert island where you have like three websites you could ever go to. I would probably pick that just because it would keep me busy for a long time.
What would be your other two, Adam?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question, John. I don't think punk news would be one of them.
That's nice.
No. Let's see. On desert islands, what do I have? I have the Discord website. I gotta have porn. And then... like, could I have Amazon? Could I order shit to the desert island? Like send raft parts. And anyway, so yeah, so go look at discord.com. It'll make you happy. It is not going to help you find old MDC things necessarily. I was going to use the UK subs as an example for this because they used to have a real old corker of website, but they have a nice modern looking thing now. So I can't.
UK subs.
They're also fairly active on Facebook.
UK
too.
Subs on tour in a couple of weeks, and I will be seeing them. And listen, people, UK subs are pretty awesome. Like even if you don't like street punk or whatever, UK subs are pretty cool live. So you should see them now while you can, because Charlie Harper is literally over 70. So that's pretty cool.
I was going to address it just a little bit. You know, the person that wrote in. He mentioned the Adolescents. You know, like. It's impossible to find their official Facebook. They're like three different Adolescents Facebook pages. John, you might remember what I'm talking about, but it's also interesting when bands try to like get older bands try and get try and become a little more tech savvy, and they'll announce stuff, but they won't want it publicized like right away. But they'll announce it on Facebook. You know, we've had that happen a few times too. So I don't know. Bands should just make it easier if they want to notice them. Not having a Facebook page now is probably detrimental, no matter how much you hate Facebook. I actually had to tell a band recently. Like they asked me, "Do we really need a Facebook?" I said, "Yeah, you do."
You know, you said that in a very Donald Trump voice and cadence, by the way, which is sort of weird.
That was sort of like more like sarcasm. That wasn't meant to be.
He said that.
It's funny because it used to be the situation back in the day when we sort of bristled at having to post MySpace links on Punk News. And it wasn't anything about like MySpace in particular. This was way before MySpace became uncool. It was more just like the concept of having a single sort of like omni-use social network was not something that we had all bought into at that point. So it felt like whenever we had to mention a band's MySpace page, we were just like, we're just giving free publicity to some fucking other website. Like, why do we want to give all this traffic to MySpace? So we always used to like try to do it in a tricky way in the stories. Like we would say like the band has posted their information online, and then we would like link the word online to the MySpace page because we didn't want to say on their MySpace page because we felt like total dipshits doing that. But now we do it all the time for Facebook. So meh, you know, there goes our moral stand is all blown up on that.
Well, you can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org.
Yeah, that was a good letter. We dug into that. What are we doing now?
Playing a tune.
All right. I'll take this one because you've got some sort of mystery new song that you're going to play later in the show. I think that whatever new song you're going to play, John, cannot feature any member of a band that's, say, older than 55.
Yeah.
or like someone that was in Black Flag at some point.
So I was going to play Mike V in the Wrath.
Oh shit, what are you going to do? So I don't know, speaking of brand new music, this is from 2007.
it's new to us.
It might be new to you. I was going down some sort of weird going through old iTunes playlists rabbit hole today, which should be of no interest to anyone but me, but hey, I'm in charge here. So there was a band out of Vancouver called Lady Hawk. They released a bunch of kind of cool guitar rocky like Dinosaur Jr. style stuff that was on Jaguar, the label, back then, and they've released things since, but they had a EP that came out in 2007 called Fight for Anarchy that was really weird because the band basically went into the studio and did a bunch of psychedelic drugs and then banged out five or six songs. So they're all of like varying tempos and levels of weirdness. So this is the song War. It is the first song off of Lady Hawk's 2007 EP, and I have no reason to play it other than that I listened to it 5 hours ago. So here you go.
Going alone, it's a suicide mission.
We're back. That was Lady Hawk. We're going to tread some old territory for me here, where we're going to talk about a good old fashioned East Bay Ray Jello Biafra online spat. Is it a spat? Would you call it a spat? Let's call it drama.
I would not call it a spat, because a spat requires two willing participants, and in this case, we only had one willing participant.
One eager participant. So
I just want to say, go ahead.
No. What's up, Briggy?
Oh, no. I just want to say, like, this is one of my favorite articles I've ever written. And thank you, John, for helping.
Ricky.
Getting the AT. What?
You have to read it, then.
You want me to read it? All right, fine. So, according to a post from Dead Kennedys guitarist East Bay Ray's official Facebook page, organizers of Riot Fest offered the band to perform at this year's Riot Fest Chicago. According to Ray, he wanted to do the show, but original frontman Jello Biafra declined the offer. East Bay Ray's post said Dead Kennedys had a sincere offer to play a reunion show at Riot Fest Chicago this fall. Jello Biafra turned it down. Class 4i, DH Pellegro, and I were looking forward to doing it. Alternative Tentacles, Biafra's label, declined to comment on the situation. Biafra last released White People and the Damage Done. That's with Guantanamo Bay of Medicine. And East Bay Ray last released East Bay Ray and the Killer Smiles.
Good record. Both good. Actually, Jell's record is great. East Bay Ray's record, good record.
Yeah. So, I mean, I saw this and I was like, God, I kind of wanted this to happen. And then thinking about them on a giant stage together, like the Misfits last year, kind of didn't want it to happen. I mean, it would be cool to see this happen, I guess. I mean, I don't know if either of you have seen the current quote-unquote Dead Kennedys. They're like my favorite. They're like in my top three punk bands of all time. There's something about just being a fan that wants me to actually see it happen. I don't know how well it would go, though. And the other question is Riot Fest becoming that festival that's going to be trying to be known for its reunions now? But still, this was my favorite article that I have written for punk news, and I've done at least a few hundred now, and I was so happy to be able to at least report on this band at least once.
Who is the current singer of the Dead Kennedys?
I think it's a skipster of Wynonna Riders, and also Black Fag.
No, Jeff Penalty was in Black Fag.
I know it's Skip McSkipster is the singer.
Ron Skip Greer, according to that. Okay, so wow, I'm so behind the times on my.
You don't even know who the new. You don't even know who the new singer Dead Kennedys is, Adam.
It's Skip.
Listen, John. We I don't want to get into a Adam name dropping thing like I have on recent episodes here.
If I was hanging out with Jello.
No, but I have been personally confronted by both Brandon Cruz and Jeff Penalty in person over shit that Punk Deuce has given the Dead Kennedys in the past. So I have a little
We don't even report on them anymore.
Well, because they don't do too much. There was a time when there was...
They just tour, yeah.
There was so much drama back in like the early 2000s between... not simply because they were touring or playing with new or playing with other singers, but there was a huge blow up about with regards to like whether Alternative Tentacles owed the rest of the guys money for the records that were out. There was I forget where the rights to some of this stuff ended up, but there was a big rights fight between it. They released that what was the live album called?
There's two, Mutiny on the Bay and Live at the Death Club.
Mutiny on the Bay was the one that came out just about the time when all that stuff blew up. So there was tons of Dead Kennedys stuff that was in the news, and Punk News's coverage back in the day was not as fair and balanced as it could have been. We were pretty pro Jello, and I mean, like behind the scenes, we were pretty pro Jello It probably shone through in some of the snarkiness that was written into the articles that were in there. And I forget if it was the same punk rock bowling or if it was two different punk rock bowlings that we were at. We used to go and actually like bowl in the bowling tournament. And we're standing around, me and Scott Heisel and Aubin and everyone else, and we're wearing Punk News bowling shirts. And then when you're wearing a Punk News bowling shirt, standing around with a bunch of punk rock people, everyone knows that you're from Punk News if they have beef with you. So at one point, like someone taps me on the shoulder and I turn around and there's this fairly solid looking but kind of short guy standing in front of me, and he's like, "Hey," and I'm like, "Hello," and he's like, "I'm Brandon Cruz," and I'm like, "Oh fuck." But it turns out that Brandon Cruz, a singer to Dr. No, of course, former child actor, he was actually pretty gracious and incredibly cool. And then we met Jeff Penalty later and he razzed us a little bit too, but he was also very cool. So neither of them actually tried to injure us, but there was a moment there where they announced their name and then just like let it sink in for a second to be like, "We know what you've done." But I don't know who this new guy is. I haven't pissed him off.
He's a 924 Guild. Well, I mean, he played in the Winona Riders, which was like a late 90s 924 Gilman / Lookout style band.
Yeah, they just reunited for that Lookouting fest thing. They played that for sure. Can I make him mad somehow? I got to make him mad. I think he's pretty chill.
I think you really got to go after. You can do it, Adam. I believe in you.
Oh, so anyways, yeah. So Jello has said nothing about this. John, you're good with the AT guys these days. Like, did you reach out? Did they want to say anything, or are you just letting it go?
I did reach out, and their comment was no comment, which is probably the first for Jello ever. I think Jello's never said no comment ever. But listen, I think Jello realized when you won the fight, there's no need to keep fighting. I don't really bear any malice to the other DK guys. As Jesse Luscious of Alternative Tentacles once said, nobody was insane in the situation, which is probably true. But it ain't the Dead Kennedys without Jello. It just isn't. You know what I mean?
I can vouch for that. It's have you guys ever seen them?
No, I haven't. But what I was saying is, people on actually on like Facebook, they'd be like, "Oh, I'd love to see Jello and Dead, you know, and the other guys." I wouldn't want to see that for a number of reasons. First of all, Jello and the Guantanamo School of Medicine. Awesome live, awesome, yes, and they do true. It right in that they do basically 2/3 Guantanamo School of Medicine songs and 1/3 DK songs, and they don't make a big deal out of it when they play. They're not like, "And now we're gonna play a DK song." They just put it in the set list, like Halford did with Judas Priest, and it's awesome. So it's like you're not like waiting for like the Dead Kennedy song. You know, they throw them in, they go back to Guantanamo songs, and it makes a really exciting, really thrilling show. Also, Jello with the Melvins is one of the best shows I ever saw was Jello with the Melvins. They do mostly Jello, about half Jello and the Melvins songs, half Dead Kennedy songs, and it's awesome. I wouldn't want to see it because you know it was just for the money if you saw them up there on stage together. It's like, the question that arises here, and we'll get to it in a second if we have time, but Jello's foundational thing is he doesn't do things just for the money. He does things for the art and because he believes it's right. So it would really bum me out to see the Jello sold out. And I'm not a "you sold out" kind of guy, but you know, Jello talks this particular talk. He basically walks the walk, if you ask me. And it would really bum me out to see Jello on stage with these guys that we know they hate each other. So it would just be weird and strange. The Misfits thing is a little different because they always hated each other, but it wasn't about the money. It's just because they kind of hate each other. So I don't mind seeing them on stage together. The first question I have, and I don't even know we need to answer it, is what if Jello and East Bay Ray and Clouds, I think Jello hates Clouds even more than East Bay, but I'm not sure. What if they like really did bury the hatchet? Like, what if they were like, "You know what, let's just put it in the past. We made some great music. Let's be friends again." Would it be cool to see that on stage? Or would that be a sad regression because that era is long past? In punk rock, we had this, and the other thing we have this thing is you should never do anything for the money. If you are doing something for the money, that means you're not being true to art. The question is, you don't see that in hip hop. You don't see that in rock. You definitely don't see that in country western. Is that philosophy, does it even hold any water at all? Or does it hold some water? Or is there nothing wrong with, or is it possible to do something for money, but also do it for the great art without either of the two biting into each other?
I think for your first question, I mean, my issue, I think, with this was, I don't think that Riot Fest would have been a good venue for this reunion. I think that it's too big. The Dead Kennedys are, at least back then, were not like, they weren't selling out like arenas and, or stuff like that. They were doing club shows and, maybe smaller festivals back then. And I think it would look weird to see them all up there playing these songs, like on a giant stage, like we did with, like we saw the Misfits last year.
Yeah, it would seem too
show busy.
Yeah, too celebratory, too show busy. I mean, if they were to truly bury the hatchet, then there are ways that they could go about that with some integrity, which is to say, like just spring it on someone, like have it be a either a Guantanamo show or let's just say it's a DK show, right? And you don't announce it, and just Jello just comes out and then they fucking shake hands and play a bunch of songs.
That would be
awesome.
And then you
just don't, maybe you don't do it ever again, and it was just a special one-time thing that you've done, right? There are ways like where you could do it where it's clearly not for the money because no one knew to pay for it. And then you're not giving anyone the chance to pay for it afterwards. Or you can walk away with your integrity. But, you know, I this is pure speculation. I don't think that's ever happened.
I don't think it happened with Jello.
Or they could just do like a few shows like Choking Victor did last year. Like they did like five shows.
Yeah, true. But the foundational philosophy of Choking Victim is a lot different than Dead Kennedys. Choking Victim broke up because they were a mess. Dead Kennedys broke up because they hate each other, you know?
Yeah.
Will Fugazi ever play like in some random library? Like you'll just go to the library and it's like Ian McKay's doing spoken word and you show up and it's Fugazi. Will there ever be a Fugazi show again? I think there will be.
I could totally see there being a Fugazi show. I could totally see there being Fugazi activity in that Were there actual terms on which that band broke up, or did they just stop doing stuff?
No, I think they just called it quits, like in 2000.
You guys are both wrong. This is famous. Really? You guys don't know this? Fugazi is the band that invented hiatus. Fugazi said, "Well, we're going on hiatus just because we have different things going on in our life." They're all still good friends. They still see each other.
Guy Picciotto lives
in Italy, but Fugazi famously invented the hiatus, and they've always said they've maintained that. We're still a band. We just haven't played in 10 years, but we might someday.
Right. So I look at it that way, saying, you know what? If at some point they do, okay. Like, I don't think it's going to be, again, they're not the kind of band that's going to be very show busy about it and try to do something. They're not going to get back together and play fucking Coachella or something. What's going to happen is that one day, quietly on the internet, they're going to go, we're demoing some songs, and then they're going to put something out or go do a tour or something. And it's going to be like with that, like stereotypically like Ian MacKay, like I'm not going to make a big deal about this sense of things.
Do you think it's a little smug?
It is, but like that's his thing. Like he can own it. if anyone can own a little smug, like it's Ian MacKay, and no one's going to judge him for a little smug, because like that's wrapped up in like everything that he's ever done.
I judge him for being a little smug. I judge it a little bit. I still like him though.
So speaking of Jello, Jello and the Guantanamo School of Medicine, his band, and a small group of other bands, bands like, oh, I don't know, like, let's see who's on the list here. It's funny because you can go down any track through this list of bands and make it sound like it's an entirely different thing. So I could say, you know, Jello in the Guantanamo School of Medicine is going to be playing with Sham 69 and Discharge and Conflict and Dayglo Abortions. And who else is going to be there? You know, like Down by Law.
Face to Face.
Face to Face.
Asian Orange.
Yeah, Asian Orange. I mean, like Good Riddance is all their newer band, I guess. Yeah, Good Riddance is going to be there, right? You could do that. Or you could look at this And you could say, let's see, let's take another track.
Rammstein, Soulfly,
Wu-Tang
Protest
Clan.
The Hero. It's nu metal fest, you know what I mean?
Yeah. D. Snyder. you've got D. Snyder, you've got P.O.D.
Well, I don't know if D. Snyder and P.O.D. fit together.
No, sure they do. Yeah. D. Snyder and Lucero and Bullet for My Valentine. Anyways, we're talking about the Montebello Rock Fest. This is the enormous Quebec-based music festival that happens every year up in Montebello, north of Quebec City or north of Montreal? I'm not really sure where Montebello is. Anyways, it's in Quebec. That's all you need to know. Brush up on your French. The headliners this year: Rammstein, Queens of the Stone Age, Iggy Pop, Alexis on Fire getting back together, The Offspring, Megadeth, the Wu-Tang Clan, At the Drive-In, AFI, Bad Religion, Pennywise, Thursday, Discharge, Sham 69, Less Than Jake, Anti-Flag, Good Riddance, Conflict, Jello, as said earlier, Teenage Bottle Rocket, Wilhelm Scream, Pop, Frenzelrom, The Living End, Down by Law, the Reverend Horton Heat, like there is 300 bands playing this fucker. So you probably need to go look at the poster in detail and zoom in on it. We have it posted on Punk News to really get a feel for what's going on here. We are trying to actually talk about this festival this year because we've gotten shit before for not talking about this festival,
I interviewed the guy once.
So we're talking about it this time. Now, I have no idea what the experience of going to some gigantic ass fest like this would be, especially one with such a weird mix of punk rock and like big radio alternative and big radio nu metal and whatever else is on here. And it's always sort of turned me off for that reason. Like, it seems like something I don't want to do. But man, everyone I ever hear from that's gone to this thing fucking loves it. So there's that. You should probably go check it out. It's of interest to you. The poster for this drives me kind of crazy because there are like a million tribute bands that also play at this thing.
Yeah.
But they're all written in like tiny text down at the bottom. So I'm looking at if you look at the bottom of the list of bands, it's like Minor Threat bracket special tribute, Fugazi bracket special tribute, Sex Pistols bracket special tribute,
Twisted Sister special tribute.
It's like the Ramones bracket special tribute by members of Goldfinger. It's like, okay. That's kind of weird. They got this like record labels listed, like Hellcat Records special tribute. Like, I don't even know what that means. But in any case, the weirdness aside, a million bands are playing this. Most of them probably appeal to at least someone that listens to the show. So you can find the details of this on Punk News. I think the count right now is actually 130 bands. This is one of these things that it's like you camp at the fest, which I've never done. And I don't know if I'm missing anything.
You ain't missing it.
I like camping.
I wouldn't do it.
But anyways, so Montebello Rock Fest has been announced. It looks like the headliner on this sucker is Rammstein.
Rammstein.
You know what? So when my wife and I were 2 years married, we went on this like whirlwind tour of Europe on like a bus tour kind of thing. And it was like a bus tour full of young people. And we were, it was like one last weird little vacation to go on before we started having kids. And we're on this tour and we had this great tour guide on the bus that was like a Swiss German guy. And we're driving around and we're coming out of Amsterdam. And as we cross the border into Germany, he just turns on Du Hast on like the bus stereo as loud as possible and plays the entire song throughout the bus at like the top volume you could get out of like the bus's PA system as we're crossing the border into Germany. And I'm like, this is so stupid, but great.
Was he being funny or was he being serious?
He was being funny, but you could tell that like him as like a German speaking person was sort of into it. Like he was like he was like mouthing every like the like singing along and just like rocking out, and he's just like, we're in Germany now, fuckers, here we go. And I appreciated that because it was super goofy.
Duhas first cell phone solo in a song ever.
What?
Duhas has a part of the song where it's a guy playing a cell phone. They don't beep like that anymore, but they used to. Duhas is the first song to do that. Maybe the only.
Huh. You know what? I can almost remember what that might sound like. What is that noise that is in London Calling that they, in the remix, they moved way up to the front of the mix?
Oh, it's like Joe's drummer saying, let's go, or something like that.
No. There's a part of London Calling that it's this little, it might be like a children's toy or something, and goes like beep, 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 beep. And it, if you listen to like the not the remasters, it's way back in the mix, and you never really hear it. It's somewhere around where like
is it a melodica? You mean?
It's somewhere around where they say like the king brought out his jet fighters, and there's that noise. It goes like pew pew, right?
Wait, you said London Calling. That's Rock the Casbah.
Oh fuck yeah, Rock the Casbah is what I wanted to say. Yeah, in Rock the Casbah there is like this cell phoney style beeping noise.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That before the remasters that came out a few years ago was buried in the mix. You could barely even know it was there. But after the remasters, it's way at the front, and the radio versions of it, it's also way at the front, and it has this like this weird effect of it being very close to what you would consider like a modern cell phone noise. So whenever that song is on, people are always like looking at their phone because of that noise. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know the sound effect. I never check my sound. It sounds like jet fighter sound effects to me.
No. After the, oh God. All right. I'm gonna look this up while we're doing a thing. So anyways, Montebello Rock Fest. There's lots of bands. Maybe there's beeping there. Let's stick on this classic bands. Let's stick on this classic bands thing. John, bring the next one in here.
Yeah, listen, so this is good news. Is HR for the past year or so has had extreme migraines so bad that he's been like in bed with them, and he's gone to the hospital a bunch of times, and he's tried a whole bunch of different treatment, some holistic, some, I guess, traditional medicine. It got so bad that he actually had to get an operation on his brain done to help alleviate the migraine, which sounds pretty heavy duty to me. So he had an operation the day before. He asked for people to give him good wishes, you know, through the air or whatever, which a lot of people did. And sure enough, HR came through the operation okay. The family doesn't know if he's going to recover from the migraines or it'll stop the migraines, but he's recovering and resting right now, which is good. The reason I brought this issue into today's discussion is when I put up a story that said HR's got such bad migraines, he's going to have a brain operation and it could prove fatal. And then I said, HR recovered. It's great news. People were like, I hope HR dies, or, you know, that homophobe gets what he deserves. Or is that really the time to like wish bad wishes on someone? It seems to me that people are getting extremely cruel, extremely petty. And also they're not recognizing the fact that HR does have mental issues. So if someone with mental issues is saying things that aren't, you know, I guess generally accepted, you don't have to say it's good that they're saying that, but you really need to beat them up because of it. HR clearly has some severe issues. And also, I mean, even if he's got issues and he does have issues, he's contributed more to punk rock and hardcore than almost anybody else. He's a legend. Doesn't he deserve some respect because of that? I don't understand the modern punk rock, I guess, stance of people saying, oh, he said one thing I didn't like, or oh, he did this, let's break him down and say he's shitty and completely disregard his incredible legacy and gigantic contribution to music. Like, I don't understand that.
I think a lot of that is just the internet, and people are garbage, Ricky. There are there's a lot of heartless comments, but I felt bad because I laughed at one. I'm not happy with myself that I laughed at it, but it made me like just kind of like anyway, someone wrote Cran was removed, and I guess that was a Simpsons reference, and I hadn't thought about that Simpsons episode in a decade. But yeah, I felt bad for laughing at that. If someone's clearly not well and they're trying to get better, I don't know why you need to shit on it.
You know why? It's because – and actually, it's long as long. I actually kind of – I stopped more or less writing in the comments section, and more or less I've stopped reading in it. And yeah. when you take a step outside of it, you realize what a cesspool it is. There's some good comments
Goes for every website.
Oh, it does. And actually, Punk News is not as bad as most websites, to tell you the truth. But I'm saying comment sections are just cesspools. And you realize once you step outside of it, it's like the same few people just being rotten. And it's the same few unhappy people that are, because they're unhappy, they try to pull other people down. And but I just... It seemed to be, I don't know if it's because the internet gives a certain anonymity, but it seemed to be very poor form to make fun of somebody that's going through a very serious operation that might not make it through. It just seems disgusting to me. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really familiar with the whole homophobia thing that happened.
Well, it's two things. So what happened, HR is Rastafarian. A lot of Rastafarians don't like gay people. Some don't mind them. They scratch Perry for one. But a lot of Rastafarians don't like gay people. Also, in the 90s, the Bad Brains had this song called Don't Blow Bubbles, which is basically has been interpreted as saying gay people have AIDS and they'll die from AIDS, so you shouldn't be gay because you might get AIDS. Dr. No actually later on said, listen, we shouldn't have said that. You know, I got nothing against gay people. So really the only person that I guess hasn't said – you know, I got nothing against gay people is HR. However, HR has never said, I hate gay people or gay people should go to hell. All HR has said is love, love. But he did write that song that suggested that you shouldn't be gay because you might get AIDS. That's, you know,
well,
in the 90s.
I guess it's up to the individual then. I mean, are you going to fault someone and completely write them off for something you don't agree with and might come off as hateful and then completely disregard everything else that they've accomplished and contributed to punk rock? You know, I guess that's up to every person. I mean
there's nothing insightful there's nothing insightful about my comment, but it really does seem to me the comment sections have a lack of humanity. Adam, like, you have anything to add to that? Or
no, you got this one down pat. I'll set it out.
Yeah, all right, Ricky, play a tune. What can we say? Listen, I wish HR the best. I don't wish anybody to die from diseases. You know what I mean? That's a bad way to go. Mm. So, and also I think I am a superstitious person. I do think it's bad mojo to wish bad diseases on people. I don't know. Go ahead, Ricky, play a tune.
Okay.
Ricky,
so
I don't wish any bad diseases on you.
I don't wish any bad diseases on you or
Adam. Thank you.
So thank you. But thank you, John. Okay. Late last year, Rats in the Wall and Brad Logan's other band and a band called Fraud out of LA released a very limited split CD called Estos Dias. And I think it only was like only 50 copies of the CD were made. And both sides are available on the band's respective band camps. So
damn, you read a physical one.
Yes, John. Damn. You did too. I'm sure you, I think you did too, didn't you?
Tell them the story quickly how we each got a copy of it.
So, okay, I went to the Choking Victim show, and the way you could only get, you know, in November, that was like, and Rats in the Wall were only selling it to, selling this CD at their shows that were at the Choking Victim shows that were very limited. It was like maybe five or six shows. John wanted one, so I got one for him and mailed it to him, but I didn't get one because I spent all my money on food because I was starving at that show. And then I guess John somehow got one and sent and mailed one back to me also.
So Ricky,
I don't know how you got
so
one.
So Ricky bought the CD and mailed it to me, and then I bought one of them.
Yeah, so that was weird. But yeah, I had run out of cash that night because I was, you know, I was down in Santa Ana and just spent the day down there basically and was just starving anyway. So that came out. How did you get it? Did you just pull strings?
I got connections, Ricky.
All right, well, Johnny G has connections. And so yeah, this came out on Black Noise Records, Brad Logan's label, and Fraud's cool, so you should check them out. This song is called Why You Trippin' by Fraud from the Estos Dias split. Here it is.
We'll be right back. you a chance. You teased me, and now that I did, you gave me a pin that you wish I was in. I struggled, yet I've been made the same. We remain the same. What you've become, who I was then is who you're now. The times have changed, it's who I've been. I've known myself since I was just a kid. And now it's me who left. It's funny and it's sad how you've been made the same. Yeah, you think they're a change. You must be back to stay. The just pathetic fool. Yeah, yeah, might never change. You must be back to stay. The just pathetic fool.
All right, we're back. I'm deviating from the schedule here because I have some. I wrote breaking news in our schedule here, but that's not really what this is. John, I have extensively done some research as we were as you were talking quite passionately about your feelings about Bad Brains, about the beeping in.
Oh, breaking news! Is that breaking news?
Yes, yeah. It's okay. So, first of all.
Yeah, Adam, let me give you a breaking news intro, like I do on CNN. Breaking
news. You could just use the beeping from Rock the Casbah. So there is a sound that appears in Rock the Casbah. It is in all versions of the song, but it is incredibly audible in the remasters forward. It happens from about 1:56 until 2:13, if you really want to go dig this out. So the people on the internet have gone to dig into what this is. First of all, if you listen to the beeping kind of sounds like the opening measures of the song Dixie. Like, I wish I was in Dixie.
Oh, I'm thinking of Daisy. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So it is the opening measure of Dixie as beeping. And so the beeping was actually from, and this is all internet hearsay here, but it seems pretty good to me. The internet seems to have concluded that this is from a digital watch. In particular, it is from a Dukes of Hazzard digital watch, of which the alarm tone played the first few bars of Dixie, just like the General Lee's horn in the Dukes of Hazzard. This watch was apparently worn by whoever was drumming on Rock the Casbah. I don't know. Like, he was Topper out at that point?
No, he's on the album, but they kicked him out for the tour. But however, he might not actually be drumming on that track, though. You see,
yeah. So I'm not sure if it was Topper per se, but in any case, whoever was drumming on that track was wearing a Dukes of Hazzard digital watch that beeped the bars of Dixie as its alarm. It went off during the recording, and they left it in the mix. So there you go.
That's cool.
They're straight from the fucking depths of the internet. I went down to Adam, weird places.
Trivia rumble time. That's at least maybe more than the second, but that's at least the second time when the Clash left a mistake sound in the song itself. Do you know the other song where the Clash left a mistaken sound in the song itself?
Oh God, yes I do.
Remember.
Sorry, maybe we're thinking about the same one. Armageddon time.
Bam.
Yeah, where who's the producer on it?
Guy Stevens
kind of comes on and tells them to wrap it up, and that's where
all right, let's have you out of there. Don't push us when we're hot.
Don't push us when we're hot, right? And they keep going. Yes. Ha. See?
Bam. Adam, you nailed that out of the park. Bam.
That's the only thing I know anything about is a few Clash songs.
Honestly, that is really cool. They left, like, it really does add to the song, you know? All right, let's have you out of there. Don't push us when we're hot.
I know, and they put a nice little echo on hot. Anyways, what are we talking about? Stories. There's some other stuff that happened this past week that you might want to go check out. Various medias and recording news and things like that. So, Bad Cop, the one of the newer Fat Records bands, they are going to be putting out a full length in the summer. They have finished recording it. They're going to be following up the 2015 album Not Sorry that they put out on Fat Ben. Is this new one on Fat? Do we know it is?
We do not know, but I would actually, I don't know. Nobody knows.
Oh, okay.
No, the post that I put in there was, it just said, that the album's dropping, this summer. And it looks like they worked with Fat Mike as producer.
Well, then there you go.
It's probably on Fat then. So yeah. So there's that. Number two, the Old Firm Casuals, which is the I've always wanted to call them an oi band, but they're not really.
No, they're definitely an oi band. They call themselves an oi band.
I mean, like, they look like an oi band. They have
skinheads. They say they're oi.
The dudes are skinheads. Yeah, but like, does this strike you as an oi song?
It strikes me as an oi song, and that the early form of oi, like Sham 69 and that kind of a thing.
You see, my major interaction with oi these days is listening to Hard Skin. Hard so skin. I don't listen to any oi that isn't like goofy cartoon oi. So, anyways, the Old Firm Casuals have released.
Wait, Adam, isn't all oi goofy cartoon oi? Oh.
Have released a new tune. It is called Wartime Rock and Roll. It comes off an upcoming 12-inch EP, which is going to be put out on Rebellion Records. You're going to look for that thing on March 20th. So you can find a link to stream the entire new single, Wartime Rock and Roll, over on Punk News right now. Any thoughts on this one, John?
I do think it's cool. Old Firm Casuals is actually a more of an active venue than one might think. They put out like three singles, three EPs a year. They put out almost an entire album each year. That being said, I do think it's cool how Lars Fredriksson, he's rich enough, he don't need to do anything. You know what I mean? So it is cool that he kind of goes back to his first love, which is oi, and he's just a straight up oi band. That being said, Lars Fredriksson's a great singer, a great songwriter music wise. He kind of fails his lyrics. Almost always invariably fall back on cliche. I don't need to hear another song about how him and his boys are going to beat me up if we don't like them, which they've got like 12 of those songs. And I don't need another song about how it's great they all can depend on each other. And also there's this one song he's got where it's like he's a criminal. It's about this guy that robs banks with a gun to feed his family and how that's noble. Well, how about all the families he's endangering by pulling out a gun and shooting at people in the bank? You know what I mean? I just feel... I actually like Old Firm. Even though I just ran it, I like Old Firm Casuals. I think the music's real good. I just wish, I think oi is ready to have the lyrics elevated into something more interesting.
Yeah.
Am I going to get beat up now by the oi gang?
You might. I don't know how many of them listen to the show. I'm okay with this song. I have a soft spot for Lars just being an old Rancid fan. But this is one of these songs that, like, I feel like I say this like every other show. I'm 2 minutes and 40 seconds into it, and I'm thinking, all right, that was cool. And then I look at the little player thing on my computer, and it's like, you got 3 minutes to go. And I'm like, why? Yeah,
that's what I was going to say. It's a 5 minute song.
Oh, you should need a license to make a 5 minute song.
guys, I've got breaking news. The Bad Cop album is confirmed on Fat.
Ooh, that's less esoteric than my breaking news. It's on FatRec's website.
Oh, is it?
I don't know.
John, or are you just messing with
me? I got it on their Instagram.
Oh, there you go.
Well, okay.
It's like we're a news website or something, eh?
Yeah, it's amazing.
So, guys, I've got breaking news. The Oi Squad has put a hit out on me. 23 cents.
John, this last story is all you. Take it.
Yeah, man. Crystal Fairy, they released their new album. The time you heard this is coming out on Friday. Today's Wednesday. By the time you hear this, it'll be out. It's Buzz. It's Dale. It's Omar. And it's Terry singing. And it's basically just the Melvins with Terry singing, except for all the songs are very high tempo, high paced. It's not slow and heavy like Melvins also are. It's kind of Melvins in their modern rock format. And it's just, I think it's cool, man. I think it's good. It's It's Melvins now have many different forms they take, and I'm all for another form of the Melvins. The band might go on tour. They had a small tour set up, but it got canceled, so who knows? It might be a non-starter. So the Melvins are always going to do what the Melvins do. This record's cool. If you like the Melvins, if you like Les Butcherettes, check this record out. It's what I wish more modern rock records were like, to tell you the truth.
I have not listened to this yet, so yeah. I'm not commenting. But the song I listened to earlier was neat.
I listened to a few songs and then I kind of skipped around. There are some jams on here. But then there's some that Sweet Self, I really wasn't into, but I specifically like the first two songs. So I think I'm about giving this another listen.
I've got breaking news, guys. John's put out a hit on Ricky for not wholeheartedly endorsing the Melvins.
How is that breaking news? I knew that was going to happen.
I'm going to play a song, and as promised, I will play a newer band. I mentioned this band a little while ago, the Coat Hangers. I'm getting more and more into this band. I was vaguely aware of them. Adam and Ricky, you guys know the Coat Hangers?
Weren't they on the end of the year list?
No. Oh, they were. You're correct. But I mean, honestly, I didn't even really know about them or have heard much of them at that point. Well, I've been digging into the Coat Hangers. It's either three or four young ladies, depending on the record. And it's a combination of kind of punk, garage rock, and kind of like biker blues, if you will. And I think they're amazing. This one song especially, Move My Soul. I mean, really, kind of like Screaming Females song, Wishing Well, Move My Soul. This song moved my soul as well. This is the paced version of their song Take It Back by the Coat Hangers.
Take it back, baby, yeah, you want it so bad. Been messing up lately, now it's making you mad. Staying out late, do whatever you like. Really then, baby, don't go out tonight. You couldn't take the pressure, took it out on your head. Get it back, baby, put the chaos to bed. You know what's right. Can't let it all fall through on you. Gotta make it right. There's nothing left for you to do. Gotta make it right. There's nothing left for you to lose. Got two roads coming, but don't know which to take. Better choose wisely, 'cause they ain't the same. Self-destructing with the frown on your face. Where you think you're going, yeah, it's such a waste. Oh, you and me, baby, yeah, we're one and the same. He's been gone a while, you got no one to blame. You know what's right. Nothing left for you to do. Gotta make it right. There's
All right, we're back. That is the end of the show. If anyone wants to email us, podcast@punkmusic.org is how you do that. I think that's it. Do we have any parting wisdom? Any West Coast vibes, Ricky, that you want to drop on?
The one thing I wanted to say before you forget and kick yourself at him is thank you, Greg Simpson, for editing.
Thank you for being a friend. Okay, yeah, thanks.
Why can't we be friends?
All right, we'll let it stop like that.